Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Over the years, I've asked myself many times what possessed my friend Quiet Jack Smith and me to travel into Powder River, smack into the middle of the mighty Sioux Nation, but I've yet to come up with a good answer. Dealing horses to the army is what I usually tell everybody else, but then as quick as I can, I smile and change the subject. There were no good reasons for our going out there or doing what we did. But I've always felt that if a man needs good reasons for everything he does, he'll die in a rocking chair with nothing to remember but yesterday's weather. I'd known an old rounder during the war by the name of Cletus Avery. He'd lived with a band of Sioux just east of the Black Hills back when the Dakotas were still the Great Forest, and everything west into Wyoming territory was virtually unknown to the white man. Remembering his stories had me looking for a reason to go there anyway, so, as crazy as it sounds, when Jack approached me with one of his fast money schemes, I jumped at the chance like a fox at a possum. I'd watched old Cletus die horribly in the last year of the war, and I thought it peculiar that the words of a dead man came to my mind as we rounded the wet trail and led a string of horses into Crofton. I remembered old Cletus's words, but I had no idea what they meant at the time. Until a man finds something he's willing to die for, he's a man with no reason for being alive.
Graphic Audio presents Ralph Cotton's Jestin Nash, narrated by Dylan Lynch, with performances by Michael John Casey, Thomas Penny, Jeff Allen, Richard Rowan, David Jordan, Thomas Keegan, Tony Nam, Reagan Wilson, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Richard Cutting, Kenyatta Rogers, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, Scott McCormick, Alyssa Wilmoth, Tim Pabone, Danny Gavigan, Mark Halpern, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Hazelford, Eric Messner, Matthew McGee, Ken Jackson, Nathaniel Perry, Deirdre Starnes, Joel David Santner, Gary Tells, Nanette Savard, and Mort Shelby. Jestin Nash Number 2, Powder River.
The road into Crofton lay deeply rutted and swollen with mud. The heavy rains we had been battling all day had eased as we brought our string of 80 horses into this ramshackle town on the edge of the prairie. Busy civilians tied down loads to their wagons and cast weird glances to the Bighorn Range beyond. The settlers' eyes searched the distant mountains cautiously in fearful anticipation of the impending war to come. Quiet Jack Smith and I kept the herd of wet horses closed until the last of them splashed past us. Then our Negro hand, Big Shot, dropped the rail gate and latched it.
I feel better already. Now the rain's let up.
I thought it never rained up here.
Where'd you hear that?
I just stared at him. He knew where I'd heard it. I'd heard it from him. My partner was Quiet Jack Smith. We had been riding together on and off since before the war had ended. He might well have been the closest thing I ever had to a best friend in this life, which didn't mean that there weren't times I would have gladly let him get shot. Me? My name's Jestin Nash. These days I was going by the name of James Beatty. At one time I had been known as Miller Crow. I lost that name and the wife who went with it when I murdered a crooked sheriff in Kansas City. Oh, and I resemble my cousin, Jesse Woodson James of Clay County, Missouri. Lots of folk mistook me for him. That was one more reason I tried to go unnoticed. We watched a wagon load of bodies roll past us on its way out of town. The dead lay stacked like cordwood. Beside the wagon, soldiers sloshed through the mud carrying shovels. Maybe it's worse here than we thought. We'd heard talk all the way from the Missouri that Red Cloud Sioux had allied with the Cheyenne and Arapaho and were killing anything that moved between here and the Nebraska Territory and Fort Phil Kearny. The fort was still under construction and heavily harassed. St. Louis oddsmakers put smart money on the fort never being completed. We turned our horses and reined up to a hitch rail outside a Rough Cut saloon, and I slipped down. We hitched our reins, and Jack stepped up on the boardwalk and entered the bar. I stayed behind to take a look at a loose stirrup. In a few minutes, I noticed Big Shot standing on the boardwalk, and I nodded toward the saloon. Jack's inside. I turned back to attend on my stirrup. Big Shot hesitated a second before going in.
Jesus, here we go.
I looked up at three soldiers backing out the door with their hands near their sidearms.
Tell them yourself!
Jack and Shot stepped out on the boardwalk and stopped 3 feet apart. Jack hooked his thumb in his gun belt near his .44 and watched for a response. The young lieutenant looked scared and puzzled. Civilians weren't supposed to act this way. He glanced at the two privates beside him for support, then back at quiet Jack. Jack smiled, but it was a smile of warning, more like a wildcat showing its fangs.
Don't tell me to do your talking for you, Lieutenant. And never, never tap me on the shoulder from behind unless you're ready to meet Jesus.
Jack was not known for beating around the bush, and 6 weeks of living in a saddle had him red-eyed and testy. The young lieutenant was trying to look unshaken. He knew he'd grabbed hold of a panther. Now he tried to let go without looking cat-shy.
Be that as it may, this boy, he can't drink at the bar with my troops.
I hurried with the stirrup, keeping my hat low on my forehead. Being wanted for killing a crooked sheriff back in Missouri kept me a little meek of presence and shallow of voice. Of course, having Quiet Jack around made up for it.
Then you should have told Big Shot, not me.
I watched out the corner of my eye and breathed a little easier as Jack glanced at Shot. If Jack meant to kill these soldiers, he wouldn't have taken his eyes off them. He made his point. He knew it when the lieutenant's face turned white and his hands drew chest high. Now he was teasing them.
You hear that, Shot? These boys don't appreciate your company, but they're too bashful to tell you.
Big Shot stood 3 heads taller than anybody I knew. He glared down at the soldiers.
Yes, boss, Jack.
The soldiers leaned back instinctively as Shot leaned forward. Big Shot was 270 pounds of steel-woven muscle wrapped in shiny black, with veins in his forearms that looked like knotted rope. His head was as bald as a cypress stump and trimmed in a pair of wire-framed spectacles that appeared always on the verge of sliding off his nose. I finished my work quickly and dropped the stirrup just as a column of cavalry rounded the far corner and headed towards us.
Time to go.
I never tarried long around anything connected to the government, especially if it carried guns. I'd been that way since the war, since riding with Quantrill. Killing that sheriff had only strengthened my resolve.
Didn't you boys just invest a few years of burnt powder and dead Yankees to free this fella?
Jack gave a head toss toward Big Shot, who just nodded, still glaring at the soldiers above the dirty wire frames. Now the lieutenant grew bolder as the column drew nearer. His hand slid to the safety flap on his holster.
There could be 1,000 coming. It won't help you a lick. They can write your mama about it, but it'll only make her cry.
The lieutenant's face flashed red. His hand tensed. I saw him think about it, bite the inside of his lip, rub his holster strap, but then he let go a tense breath.
Ten hut!
He and the two privates spun to face the column of troops. The two privates stood wide-eyed. You could see their heartbeat in their faces. Jack glanced at me and winked. I cursed him under my breath.
Lieutenant?
A stocky major called out to the lieutenant. He was a serious-looking feller with a red-gray beard.
Is there a problem here?
No, sir. This colored boy came in the saloon.
I came looking for my associate.
I see.
The major rested his hands on his saddle and gazed at the distant horizon. The sky was a low, boiling pot of gray lead streaked with swirls of white.
And you found him?
That is correct.
The major turned his face curiously at the sound of Big Shot's polished words. I stood between the horses, studying my thumbnail.
What is your business in Crofton?
The major's eyes drifted across the three of us. Crofton was a thrown-up shack town with one saloon and a whorehouse and a big ragged tent. I reckon we were a hard-looking crew even for that place. We'd been living among 80 head of muddy horses since we left the Butte 7 days ago. 5 weeks on the trail before that. Sweat and mud streaked our clothes and faces. We were armed to the teeth, and our guns were the only clean things about us. I stared at Jack, waiting for him or Shad to say something, but they just glared at the soldiers until I finally stepped forward from between the horses and looked up from under my low brim.
Well, Major, we're taking horses up Powder River, up to Fort Kearney. I'm a dealer out of Kansas. These fellers work for me.
Powder River? Do you realize what's going on up there? Didn't you notice a load of bodies?
I've got a contract, and I've got time and money invested. I'm taking them in.
Major, sir, these men are belligerent, and their attitude is quite obstinate.
Watch your language.
That's the thing about Quiet Jack. When you least need it, he throws in his 2 cents. Other times, when you need him to say something, he draws up like a cinch.
I'm Beatty, James Beatty.
I kept a straight face.
I'm bringing these horses in under the authority of Colonel Henry Carrington, 18th Infantry.
The major looked suspicious as I stepped forward, handing up the requisition from inside my wet riding duster.
Horses?
I said a silent prayer as the paper passed to his gloved hand. It was a flat-out forgery Jack had bought from mysterious Dave Mather back in Hayes City. Mather was a slippery sort, and this horse scheme was all his and Jack's idea. Mather said he and a couple of Texas outlaws used the forged paper to bring in a string of horses a year earlier and had made a ton of money on the deal.
Horses? For Carrington's infantry? What will poor dear Carrington think of next? He has a marching band, you know. Plays snappy, I mean real snappy music, I'm told.
These are top stock. They've been properly broken and cared for.
That much was true. We'd stolen them here and there from some of the better stables and auction barns across upper Missouri, thieving in the dark of night. I was known to have a keen eye for good horse flesh. These were fine animals. The major glanced through the requisition, flipped it over, checked the backside, folded it, and flipped it back down to me. I felt the tension lift from my shoulders as I stuffed the paper back inside my duster. He nodded at the lieutenant.
That will be all. You and your men report to your company.
Then he turned back to me as the 3 soldiers scurried away.
You'll find few decent folk left between here and Fort Kearney. Mostly Indians, outlaws, and bounty hunters. I see you're not Indians. If it weren't for that requisition, I might wonder if you were one of the others.
I'm a businessman. Nothing else. Major...
Trapp. Major Leonard C. Trapp, 11th Cavalry.
I would remember his name if we got on the spot. He'd examine the forged dispatch without questioning it. If need be, I would mention his name down the line. Once we got the horses in, we would sell them for top dollar, clean and simple.
This is strictly business, Major Trapp. I've no hankering to mix it up with Red Cloud's bunch or anybody else.
I see.
Corporal Pyle!
A soldier rode up from the rear of the column leading a sorrel mare with a blanket-wrapped corpse draped across her saddle. Blue, stiff hands hung from beneath the blanket. Flies swarmed in the wavering stench as Trapp reached out and flipped up a corner of the blanket. I swatted a fly from my face as I stepped forward. I wasn't sure what Trapp's point was in showing me the swollen corpse. Maybe it was meant to scare me. I'd seen worse during the war along the Missouri border, but I tried to look real shocked.
Mercy!
This is one of the Pope gang. The Sioux got to him before we did. Ever seen or heard of the Pope brothers?
No, I don't reckon I have.
I stared at the back of the corpse's head. A flap of scalp hung down, covered with flies. The ears were gone. White rib bones and spine glistened up his back. From the jagged carving pattern, I would say he was still alive, screaming and kicking when the skinning started. I winced, feeling the skin on my back tight.
They're rotten dogs, the Popes. They prey on anybody crossing between here and Piney Creek. They've hit our payroll twice in the past year. We tracked him 3 days across the lower shoals. This is what we found.
Trapp watched my eyes a few seconds longer. I stared back, wondering what he meant by it.
Like I said, Major, we're in and out. Business only.
Very well, carry on.
The Major tipped his finger to his hat and glanced past me and across Jack and Shad. We watched in silence until the patrol rode off down the mud street and disappeared out toward the army camp.
Carrington's regiment is infantry, not cavalry.
Nothing's perfect.
Jack nodded at the whorehouse, which wasn't so much a house as it was a ragged tent.
From where we stood across a mud street, I saw a cloud of flies swarm above a pile of broken whiskey bottles, getting in their licks before the next round of storms.
Let's talk about it in a more social climate. I'm on vacation here.
Jack had been calling this his vacation since we left Missouri. I didn't ask why. I glanced at the big ragged tent.
Jack, you could catch something in there that you couldn't scrape out of your belly with a broad axe.
The major said carry on, and I'm going to, right now.
Jack lifted his eyes and brought them down on mine with a look that said the only way out of town was through that whorehouse tent.
That's a big tent. Reckon they got a hot bath a man could slide into?
If they don't, they'll make you think they do.
Come on, Shad, let's take a break.
I'll tend the horses.
The big man stepped down and spun his reins from the hitch rail.
You ain't real smart, are you? First you send him in a saloon where he ain't welcome, and now an army whorehouse?
A Catahoula cur ran up beside me, sniffed my muddy boots. I leaned without stopping, patted the dog's bony head, and nudged him away just as he cocked a leg and shot a stream at my boot.
Oh, nabbit. Surely to God, Jack, anybody who could stand it is welcome to a bath in a place like that.
Yeah? Well, what makes you think he'd only want a bath? Suppose he wanted to pin something down. Suppose, like any man with any mind left after snuggling up to a rifle barrel every night for 6 whole weeks...
Jack's words slammed shut in his throat as a shot rang out, and we spun toward the livery corral and unholstered. I caught a glimpse of Shad in the corner of my eye. He'd stepped up into the saddle, and now he spun his horse, rearing it up as he jerked his rifle from the scabbard. The shots rang out of the corral. Jack and I bounded forward, dove through the flap on the tent, and rolled to our feet. Four snatched blankets around him and scurried to the rear of the tent. One of the horses protested as a pair of muddy boots climbed her naked back, trampled her into the mud, then tore through the back flap. Peeking out the tent flap, I began waving my arm at Shad.
Get back!
I tried to warn Shad off, but he reined toward the corral as he cocked his rifle one-handed.
Oh, hell, Jack! He's riding right into it!
What's wrong with him? All's I wanted...
Come on, he's going in!
I switched the .44 to my left hand and jerked the .36 from my shoulder holster. The muddy whore threw a chamber pot at us, but we were out and gone when it hit a pole in front of the tent, collapsed. We fired at the livery barn, 30 yards away, splashing water as we ran to our horses. Shad was over halfway there when the volley erupted. And his horse went down in a spray of mud. Jack jumped into his saddle. I stayed in the street, covering Shad with both pistols, blazing away as he rolled from the downed horse. Bullets slapped into the mud around him as he rolled behind a water trough. Jack jumped his horse to the middle of the street, pulling mine behind him. When I grabbed the reins, he'd cover the livery barn, and in a second we splashed toward Shad.
Damn it, Shad!
Jack dove into the mud beside Shad and threw his arm over the trough and emptied his .44 into the barn.
All you had to do was take cover!
They're coming out!
The barn door blasted open and three riders in long dusters pounded out, full run, firing in every direction. I saw a soldier tumble from the roof of the saloon. Another fell from a boardwalk. I glanced around quickly, searching for traps patrol. Nothing.
Never when you need them.
A shotgun blast came from the door of the saloon, and one rider flew from his saddle, slamming into the rider beside him. Now, one lone rider splashed on as the other two tried to stand and shotguns tore them apart. I intended to lie still beside the trough with Jack and Shad as the rider splashed past us, but I saw the horse he was riding was one of ours, and I lost my head for a second.
No!
Before Jack could stop me, I jumped to the middle of the street and put my last three bullets in the rider's back. I snapped back to my senses, watching him roll in the mud, his duster tails flipping like a windmill.
Oh, no. Not over a stolen horse.
I breathed through clenched teeth, feeling a sickness ripple in my stomach. For a few seconds, the town fell silent. Then, from back up the street, the naked whore stuck her face through the flap of the sagging tent.
God damn you!
What's wrong with her? Does she think we caused all this?
I stared at the body in the street and swallowed hard.
I don't know.
An old man ran toward us, waving his hat and laughing across empty gums. I glanced at Jack and Shad with a puzzled look. Jack just shook his head. Now faces ventured from behind wagons and doorways.
seen the whole gang. He just shot the holy gold of hell out of Jim Pope. Yeah, he sure did. This man right here.
He reached his hand all the way up past my head and pointed down. I ducked from under his finger and walked toward the body 20 yards away, hoping the old fool would shut his mouth. But he raved on and on like a town crier. The soldier appeared beside me and glanced down.
Good shooting.
Then he disappeared. I stood over the body lying in the mud. Face down, spread eagle, the man convulsed and turned his head to the side, staring up at me with his mouth gaping. Blood frothed from his lips. His hand stretched out, straining for the pistol only inches from his fingertips.
Good shooting, you rotten son of a...
I reached out a foot to kick his gun away, but my other foot slipped in the mud, and I ended up kicking him in the face. Then fell on him.
Ooh, I beat the living hell out of him! Somebody stop him, he's going crazy!
Jack and Shad ran up and pulled me to my feet.
Damn it, Mr. Beatty. This man's had enough.
I fell, Jack. I'm sorry I even shot him, let alone... A clerk wearing an apron and carrying a shotgun made his way through the crowd.
You should be. I'd hate to be in your boots when his brother Parker gets a hold of you.
Oh, he ain't afraid of him.
The old man ran up beside me and raised three gnarled fingers high in the air.
I seen it! Three times right square in the back, and then kick his damn face in.
Shut up!
I pulled the old man's arm down. Three soldiers and a handful of clerks gathered around us. The muddy whore came running up wrapped in a blanket.
Well, I'm sorry. Thought y'all were with that son of a bitch that ran over me.
Oh, God forbid.
With a smile, Jack eyed the rise and fall of her breasts beneath the blanket. Disgusted at the exchange, I shoved my way through the crowd. I walked to the barn, eyes fixed straight ahead. Inside the barn, I stared into a dark, empty stall. Less than an hour, and I already had that gnawing feeling you get when you sense that whatever your plans are, you've just caught a glimpse of them slipping downhill, headed to hell in a handbasket. There was something about killing a man for stealing a horse that I myself had stolen less than 3 weeks ago that would not settle. I stood in the barn and tried washing the picture away with hard jolts of whiskey from a flask I carried. But it lay etched in my mind, bloodstained beneath a swirl of burnt powder.
Over a stolen horse?
Jack reached around and took the flask from my hand.
I know. I acted without thinking. Now I wish to God I hadn't.
I reached my hand around without turning, and Jack slapped the flask in it.
Well, I wouldn't take it too hard. According to that whore, the Popes ain't a real Christian bunch.
Is that who I just shot? Over one of our stolen horses while he was just trying to get away?
Yeah. Then I kicked him while he was dying.
Jack, I slipped. I didn't mean to kick him.
I didn't figure you did. I'm just saying that's how this bunch will call it. By the time word gets to them, it'll sound like you did everything but torture him with a branding iron. You know how this stuff goes.
Yeah, I reckon I do.
I nodded back over my shoulder toward the street.
Yeah, sir, they shot him three times, and then for good measure gave him a boot to the face.
All it takes is some old geezer like that.
I caught a glimpse of Shad walking into the barn and turned around as he came toward us with his rifle hanging from his hand.
Hard to believe, but Jip Pope is still alive.
How the hell?
I don't know. Some idiot is out there cracking his head with a pistol barrel.
Jesus, what next?
Here he comes!
The bodies of the two dead outlaws lay in a bloody heap near the corral gate. They looked like chopped meat that had been padded back together. Some of the townsmen had tied the wounded man to a board and propped him against the corral fence. They stepped back as we walked closer.
You son of a bitch! Where the hell are your brothers?
The cussing was coming from a bearded man in buckskins who was hefting a bucket of water from the horse trough. Before we could stop him, he had sloshed it into Jip Pope's face.
He's the one that done it!
The Catahoula cur licked a bloody puddle near the outlaw's feet.
Now, where's your brother?
Ah!
The feller in buckskin grabbed Pope by the hair, pulled his face up, and shook his head back and forth. The dying man choked and strangled on the blood and water. A fresh gash from a pistol barrel glistened on his jaw. The Catahoula cur snapped at his buckskin trousers. Without looking down, he dealt the dog a sharp kick in the ribs. The animal sailed 4 feet and landed in the mud. Dark blood ran from the outlaw's mouth as the bearded man pulled out his pistol for another swipe.
I said, where's your brother?
On the ground, the dog's eyes shined above snarling fangs as he crept closer. Just as the big feller drew back his pistol, I stepped in, grabbed his arm.
Leave him be!
You the one that shot him?
The big man stepped back glaring at me, his pistol hanging from his hand.
He sure did! 3 times right in the back, and then he beated the fire out of him.
Jack, see if you can shut him up.
What'd I do?
Why are you asking?
Because I've been tracking this bunch for a month.
Lawman?
No, bounty man. I caught him, and the other two hiding in the livery barn. It ain't right you shooting him after me putting in all that time.
I'm not claiming any bounty.
Good, because I am.
He dropped his pistol in his holster and reached for the outlaw's hair. I caught his arm and shoved him away again.
But you ain't knocking him around.
I thought I saw the man's hand twitch near his gun, so I drew mine and pointed it straight at his chest.
Don't even think of it.
I stared into the bounty man's eyes. I saw that he was still ready to go for his pistol. Cocking a gun in this feller's face was like pouring butter in my boot. He didn't help me a bit, and he couldn't care less. He looked close at my cocked 44, then back to my eyes. A trace of an evil grin crawled through his white beard.
He's fixing to kill again!
The crowd stepped back slowly.
Easy.
Stay out of this, Jack. I had my hands full. I didn't need Jack singing background. The big feller's hand moved an inch closer to his gun.
Okay, but your gun is empty.
I felt the hair curl on the back of my neck. The big feller took a step forward as his hand moved to his holster with all the time in the world.
So's mine.
Hold it. This is all a big mistake.
Damn right it was.
As I saw his gun start up from his holster.
But mine's loaded.
The bounty man opened his hand, stared at the long rifle barrel, and let the pistol drop back in his holster. I stood silent for a second until my heart quit thumping against my shirt. Then I stepped forward.
Now, let me tell you something.
I jerked bullets from my belt, shoving them in my gun with a trembling hand.
Now we'll kill him!
The big feller stepped back as I stepped forward.
I ain't claiming a bounty, but I'll turn him over to these lousy soldiers before I let you beat him.
So what? You kicked him!
I didn't mean to!
Yeah, you didn't mean to shoot him. Didn't mean to kick him. What did you mean to do?
I glanced toward the soldiers.
All right, he's yours.
What are we supposed to do with him?
Turn him over to your provost marshal and tell him there's no bounty due.
I'll kill you.
Shouldn't we take him to the hospital first?
That won't be necessary. He's dead now.
I felt the sickness crawl across my stomach as I turned and walked away.
I'm not through with you. Not by a long shot. Hear me? Do you hear me? I'll track you down and kill you.
Kept walking. Shad had rode out to the army camp with the two soldiers and dropped off Pope's body at the provost marshal's office while Jack and I grained and watered the horses. He returned about the time we'd finished.
So, what do they say?
I spoke to Shad's back as he swung down from the saddle.
Did you tell him how it happened?
He turned toward me, took off his hat, and slapped dust from his shirt without facing me.
They said it was obviously a case of self-defense, judging from the number of holes in his back.
What's so funny?
Shad shrugged and dropped his hat back on his head.
It was either that or call it suicide.
Felt my neck boiling under the skin.
Seriously, Mr. Beatty, they said it was the only way to avoid a ton of paperwork. He also said you would have to get Major Trapp's permission before leaving tomorrow. Something about trouble up the Bozeman Trail.
Damned army. Soon you'll have to get permission to scratch a behind.
I turned and pulled a clean, damp shirt from my saddlebags.
I'll handle Trapp. The sooner we get away from here, the better I'll like it.
I took out a rolled-up pair of damp socks.
I heard it never rains up here.
I was squinting hard at Jack.
I think it'd be wise if the two of you stayed and faced the Pope gang right here. That way, the army
would be... What do you mean, the two of us? My wet shirt and socks were hanging from my hand as I looked at Chad.
After all, gentlemen, I'm just the hired help here. You can't expect me to meddle in your personal problems.
Well, I'll be damned. If you hadn't rode into that mess like Sherman into Georgia, we wouldn't be worried about the Pope gang.
Oh, I see. I caused you to shoot Jip Pope in the back. I'm not worried about them, Mr. Beatty. Not for half a dollar a day. That's my point. But you have to admit, it would be better facing them right here with the army behind you than out there on your own.
That does make sense.
Jack reached into my saddlebags and took out a bottle of whiskey.
But I don't like nobody telling me where I can or can't go. Especially after I've already made plans. I'm kind of like Red Cloud in that regard.
He threw back a shot and let the bottle hang from his hand.
Besides, this is a working vacation for us. We've been curious to look at the countryside.
You're kidding.
No, sir. Sightseeing ain't no joking matter. And once we get rich selling horses, we might tour up on Milk River. Mighty the moose.
Jack winked, cocked his hat, and headed through the door with our only bottle of whiskey. Shad stared back and forth between us until the door closed.
Is he serious?
I smiled, slipped out of my muddy shirt, and slung it over a stall rail. Don't worry about Major Trapp. I'll handle him first thing in the morning, then we'll light out of here.
Just like that. You'll say what? Pardon me, Major, but my friend and I are on vacation. We're curious to see the countryside.
Yep, just like that. You can go or stay, whichever sets well with you. It's your choice. But once we set out to do something, we see it through no matter how tough it sounds. I said I'm taking them horses to Fort Kearney, and I'll do it if I have to pack them on my back. That's just how it is.
But we could take care of the Pope gang right here, then take the horses to Kearney. Doesn't that make good sense?
I don't know about good sense, but like Jack said, it ain't in our plans. If we run into the Pope gang, we'll just shoot them real smart-like and keep on going. As far as permission, I'll have Trap eaten out of my hand come morning.
I patted the leather wallet in my pocket.
You watch. I know how to speak his language.
Perhaps I shouldn't dwell on this, but isn't it bad enough riding into an Indian war, let alone having a band of outlaws gunning for you?
It's a minor setback, but we'll handle it. Besides, I'd rather face a gun battle out in the bush than cooped up here like sitting ducks. I'm a country boy, Mr. Shad. I'm more at home out there.
But there are troops here
that... Yeah? Where were they today? They probably heard the gunfire and thought it was pigs farting. What you've got here is a bunch of slack-shouldered draftees and galvanized Yankees. Half of this bunch were war prisoners till last year. The real soldiers are still licking their wounds and getting measured for a wooden leg. Any good officer is still laid up drunk in Virginia, shooting frogs along the Potomac.
What perception?
That's why General Connor's cavalry troops left here walking last year, holding their butt with both hands.
General Connor has been a distinguished Indian fighter his entire career.
Well, then somebody forgot to tell the Sioux, because they whipped him proper. Now he's sitting up in Utah with his chin in his hand, wondering where it all went wrong.
Shad took off his spectacles and scrubbed them with his thumb and finger. I leaned against a bale of hay.
I fail to see how any of this pertains to us.
I'm just pointing out the army ain't fared so well.
All the more reason. If the Sioux are beating the Federal Army, armed troops in great number, what chance do the three of us have?
The next morning, I struck out early to the army camp, huddled in my duster with my hat pulled low against a fine mist of rain that grew heavier as a dark sky closed from the west. Thin streaks of lightning twisted and curled and danced like the devil's daughters high atop the Bighorn Range.
I thought it never rained up here.
I addressed this observation to a stocky corporal. Stepping from the muddy streets up onto the boardwalk outside the command shack, I took off my hat and slapped water from it.
Where'd you hear that?
He was looking me up and down like an old hand eyeing a greenhorn.
Friend of mine.
I ran my hand across my face and knocked on Major Trapp's door.
Yes, enter.
Trapp looked up from a stack of paper, nodded, and looked back down.
My wrangler says I need to see you before heading up to Kearney.
He glanced up and back down, scribbling with a pen.
Hmm.
You're not going anywhere.
Well, not this minute. The rain...
No, you're not going anywhere, period, and that's final.
He dropped the pen and leaned back in his chair with a determined smile.
You could have gone yesterday, right after we talked, but now the order's come from Fort Kearney. No civilians, no way, no how, unless you have a minimum of 30 men. That's the new playing rules.
For how long?
Until Red Cloud's bad faces finish their sweep. It's for your own good. You come up around here where you don't belong and wind up meddling in everybody's business. Things are bad enough without outsiders coming in peddling their goods. Whiskey, guns, religion, horses. What's so important about taking horses up there anyway? Do you have some kind of idiot death wish?
They're for the army, Major. It's how I make a living. And like I said before, I've no hankering to mess with Red Cloud or anybody else. Tell you the truth, I'm kind of on a spot here.
Yes, I know about the trouble yesterday. Good shooting, by the way, but I have my orders.
Then you ought to realize I'm just as safe out there as I am here if the Pope Gang comes calling.
It's not just the Pope Gang you have to worry about. Now listen close. There's a war going on. Are you stupid or something? This town is disappearing, wagon load at a time, and all of them heading south, not north, not west, south. Doesn't that register? Any fool can get into Powder River. The difficulty will be getting out again.
Look, Major, I'll go broke feeding them if I can't take them.
Go home, Beatty. A horse dealer. That's about one step above a thief and one step below a maniac.
I just need to get in and out as quick as I can. I know this place could be a bare spot in the road by the time I get back.
Uh-huh. And when it's gone, so are we. There'll be nothing left between here and Fort Laramie. You'll be going to hell and locking the door behind you.
I know it's risky, but it's no different than sitting here waiting for the Pope punch.
The Popes aren't likely to make a move while my troops are here, and if they did, we'd back you up. Of course, we will be riding out come evening. We're heading up wide to the Bozeman, bringing in some settlers. Could be 3 or 4 weeks.
See? I'll lose either way. At least let me choose...
Will that be all?
I studied him a second, then took $100 from inside my duster, dropped it before his face, and stepped back without saying a word.
Well now, thank you.
The money disappeared into his tunic. I smiled and nodded as I turned toward the door. That's how it's done, I thought. Clean and simple. No beating around the bush. I had just reached the door when...
By the way, I'm posting guards around the livery barn. You can sell your horses here if you wish, but if you try to leave with them, you'll be arrested.
Now wait a darn minute! What about that money I just gave you? What do you think that's for?
I suppose you're just a simple-minded, generous kind of person. If I thought otherwise, I'd have to arrest you for attempted bribery.
I took a step toward his desk.
Guard?
The stocky corporal ran in with a rifle to port arms.
Show Mr. Beatty out of camp, but feel free to call again, Mr. Beatty, if I can be of further assistance.
I stomped out, boiling mad, and saw a private standing beside my horse, holding my reins in his hands. Water dripped from his garrison cap. I snatched my reins from the private's hand. The stocky corporal tipped his hat.
For sure, come again, lad. We're your public servants. We aim to please.
What happened?
Jack eyed me up and down as I walked in and dropped into a chair, slapping water from my hat. Two grizzled old teamsters and the Catahoula cur came and peeped through the door as I pushed back my hat and stared straight ahead. Jack shrugged after I told him about Trap and $100.
And that's it? He just thanked you?
That's the whole of it. Call me Simple Mike.
Well, you've been called worse.
I stared at Jack. Two soldiers and a yellow-haired whore shot us a quick glance, then turned back to the bar.
All three beat one to death with his pistol barrel.
Didn't he know it was a bribe?
Better believe he knew it. I should have shot it.
Yeah, I wish you had. Then why stop with the Pope Gang and CW Flowers when you could stir up the whole Federal Army?
What's that supposed to mean?
It means you can cause more trouble in the shortest time than anybody I've ever seen. You've shot my sightseeing plumb to hell.
Jack, none of it's my fault.
I know, but let's just look at everything that ain't your fault. One, you killed Jip Pope for stealing a stolen horse. Didn't just kill him, no sir, backshot him. And stomped the hell out of him while he was dying. His brothers will feel real good about that.
Jack, I didn't stop
him. I know, but that don't matter. It looked like you did. Two, you nearly tangled with one of the meanest bastards twixt hell and Texas.
You reckon that really is C.W. Flowers?
That's what Queenie said.
Queenie?
Yeah, ain't that a pretty name?
What'd she say?
She said if you owed me any money, I ought to collect it real quick. God love them. That's all they think about, ain't it?
While Shad and I had spent the night in the livery barn washing off in a rain barrel, Jack had visited Queenie. Now he was clear-eyed and chipper, wearing a fresh-washed shirt. His hair was smartly parted, and his smooth-shaved jaw smelled of witch hazel.
I reckon. Do you think he'll hold any hard feelings?
Oh, yeah. According to Queenie, he'll be on you tighter than a wood tick. That's why you ain't welcome in the tent. He's the one that killed the Quince brothers. One-Eyed Jake and Marvin, he brought back their heads in a gunny sack.
Great. I'll feel a lot better, thanks.
Of course. He'll have to beat the Popes to you, according to Queenie.
Y'all must have had just a wonderful conversation. I'm glad to see you're so cheerful about everything.
Yeah, I told you wasn't worried. I told you're Wyatt Earp, leader of the Earp gang.
Well, Shad caused it all, riding into a gun battle just to see about them horses?
Ain't that what we're paying him for, to look after the horses?
He should have used better sense.
Then you ought to tell him so. Tell him next time you poke an empty gun in a bounty man's face just to keep his nose out of it.
Yeah, I reckon I can't say too much. He did real good, didn't he?
Yeah, I figured he would. That's why I favored hiring him. You didn't do too bad yourself. That was some good shooting until you run out of bullets. Of course, it would have looked better on you if he'd been riding backwards or you'd been standing in front.
I pictured Jip Pope flying from his horse and rolling in the mud, same as I'd pictured it all night in my mind.
That was the strangest thing. I don't know how it happened. I ain't that good a shot.
I know. I've seen you shoot. I'm surprised you didn't gun down a bunch of innocent bystanders.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I ain't that bad a shot. Am I?
Are you what?
He gazed off to the bar. The whore led the two soldiers out the back door.
Stop it!
Am I that bad a shot?
He ain't the best, let's put it that way.
I dropped three straight through his washboard on a running horse. I'd like to know who could do any better.
That's it. Get cocky about it. Yesterday you was dragging the bottom about killing him.
I know, but he's dead. And I can't change it.
Yeah, but his brothers ain't. And somewhere along the line, we're going to run into him. You can count on it. Them and C.W. Flowers.
Got a problem with that?
Nah, what do I care? But I'm wondering if we ought to pay Shad something extra from here on. We might be asking a lot of him.
He took the job. He knew it had paid.
It's just something we might want to consider is all. We're heading into some rough country with some long odds against us. I hate to lose a good gun over a half a dollar a day.
You're not wanting to go, are you?
It ain't the smartest thing we've ever done. But it'll be something to talk about for a long time. I just don't want to go back to Missouri telling everybody how you got killed. It ruined my vacation.
Then offer him a dollar more.
That's good, cuz.
Jack nudged me as I glanced up and saw Shad walk up to the door and stop. Jack looked around and motioned him in with a wave of his hand.
Hell with the arm if they don't like it.
Jack shot the bartender a hard frown. The bartender ducked his head and busied himself behind the bar as Shad walked over to the table.
I checked on the horse Jip Pope was riding. It's lame. And the other two horses kept going. They haven't been found. Someone evidently caught them and kept them. I hate to tell you, but there are armed guards at the stable. They said we can't take the horses up to Kearney.
Don't worry about them. I'll figure something out.
You're kidding.
Jack slid a clean glass across the table and filled it for Shad. Shad just stared at it as Jack took a drink from the bottle and passed it to me. I set it down and slid it to the middle of the table.
We were just talking about what happened yesterday, Shad, but how it might get a little tense from here on.
It certainly could.
You were right in what you said last night. Half a dollar a day seems a little slim for what this could turn into.
Are you offering me an increase in pay or telling me I should be seeking other employment?
Whatever suits you. But if you ride out, you best travel by night and hide by morning. By now, you're the wild-eyed cannibal that helped kill Jip Pope.
And was ready to throw down on C.W. Flowers.
Shad pushed his hat up his forehead with a puzzled look.
You're still determined to go?
Sure, why not?
They're holding the horses.
I'll figure something out.
Shad rubbed his chin and straightened his spectacles.
I still think we would be better off facing the Popes here. But Obviously, you're not gonna listen.
It ain't in our plans.
Of course not, I know. Your travel itinerary through an Indian war. I hope you remember to bring fishing poles.
Like I said last night, you can go or stay.
How much of an increase are we talking about?
$1 a day.
Being educated doesn't mean I'm a fool, Mr. Smith. I can bump horses for half a buck a day, but killing or being killed is worth a full share of the business. Whatever business it is, wouldn't you agree?
How long have you been putting this together?
Ever since I've been the last man on the bottle. I gave it some careful consideration after our talk last night. I know there's more going on than taking a string of horses to Fort Kearney, and I don't buy the vacation story. You gentlemen couldn't be that stupid.
I squinted at Jack and shook my head. Selling horses was all we'd planned on doing. That and maybe hitting a bank or two on our way home. I figured the vacation part was just Jack's way at making a little joke of it.
If you want me to side with you, I'll side with you. But let's stop talking about chicken feed. If I'm in, I'm in for a third. And I want the conversation to quit changing every time I enter the room.
Huh, we've seen you've got guts. You any good with a gun?
Yes.
And you don't mind killing?
No, not if it's necessary.
Well, I reckon you're in.
Very well, gentlemen. Now, you want to tell me what you were discussing when I came in?
The weather.
As we started out of the saloon, the two old teamsters stepped through the doors with their ragged hats hanging from their hands. The teamsters' faces were covered with hair, fear, and streaks of mud.
Begging your pardon? We heard you got horses for sale. We's hoping maybe you'd help
riding
us
out. Horses. They're too expensive to be pulling freight. I started around him, but his partner, a squat little feller with tobacco stains in his beard, stepped right before me. His lips trembled as he spoke up to me.
Mister, all I got is rolled up in that wagon, and we run our horses plumb to death getting here. You gotta sell us some. You gotta.
He threw back his coat with a rough and trembling hand, revealing a rusty pistol.
For I'll fight you if and I have to.
Easy now, feller. I raised a hand slowly between us and glanced between Jack and Big Shot. They kept from smiling. I don't want to fight you, but them horses are promised to the army. Nothing I can do about it.
Come on, Tack. We played out our string. Reckon we'll die right here.
Don't worry, the army will get the two of you out of here.
Mister, my woman's laying dead in that wagon, wrapped in a wet blanket. Reckon the army'll tote her back where I can bury her in a soft place? 50 years, mister, 50. I'll not watch him roll her in a ditch. Not as long as there's...
I couldn't stand seeing the old feller shame himself. Wiping something from my eye, I turned back to Jack and Shod. Reckon we can spare a couple of horses?
Certainly.
Sure.
Four? It's a big wagon.
All right. From now on, we only deal with the army. In cash. No more sad stories.
I meant to tell you, I promised Queenie and the girls last night that we'd sell them enough horses to get them out of here.
I just stared at him.
How many? For how much?
None of them. For 100 apiece. Same as we'd get from the army.
Yeah, that's okay. Beats taking them to Fort Kearney. But from now on, let's stick to the plan. We turned and headed back to the saloon.
Well, there he goes, folks. Stalking the streets like a wildcat, ready to kill and kill again.
Jack and Shod walked on as I snatched up a chunk of dried mud, spun around, and threw it at him.
Whoa!
He ducked behind a wood pile, then stuck his head out with a bewildered look.
What did I do?
As soon as we stepped inside the saloon, six big fellers turned facing us from the bar. On the floor near their feet, a wild-eyed prisoner lay shackled to an iron ball.
Are you Beatty?
He was the tallest of the bunch and wore a long fur coat, pulled open to show a pair of black-handled Walker Colts. A half-moon scar ran beneath his left cheek. Who's asking? I felt Shod and Jack drift to the side as I took a step forward. The other men eyed us close. The one on the floor just stared with a crazy grin.
Jake Howard, Federal Marshal. I hear you've got horses for sale.
His left hand moved up and rested on the bar. He offered a firm smile from behind a drooping mustache. I glanced at Jack and Shad. There was no way I would sell stolen horses to a federal marshal, especially Long Jake Howard.
We've got a deal with the Army to deliver them to Fort Kearney. They need them real bad.
I was ready to flash the forged paperwork, but decided against it as I stepped closer to the bar.
So do we, just as bad.
He flipped out a leather bag and dropped it on the bar.
We've already looked them over. Name a price. We're taking 18 just as quick as we can get them. Some for us and some for supplies.
I'd like to help, but they're going to the Army and that's that.
I said, name a price.
His men spread farther along the bar. Two of them stepped out in the middle of the floor. The bartender just remembered something he'd forgotten out back. I felt my hand tense beside my holster. And I told you...
200 ahead.
Queenie stepped around from the door and shoved a wad of money in my shirt pocket.
There's the 900 I owe you for the horses. Less expenses.
She gave Jack a wink and then proceeded to sell her 9 horses to Long Jake Howard at a $900 profit. Jack watched, slack-jawed.
I still need 9 more.
Queenie stuffed the money up under her dress and walked past us with a smug grin. I glanced at Jack and Shy. For 200 ahead, I'd sell horses to the devil in hell. After what Queenie just did to us, I felt I needed to make up the loss.
Okay, 9 more, 200 ahead.
Long Jake nodded toward the door.
Go get the horses.
And the two men in the middle of the floor headed out for the livery barn. I stepped to the bar.
Let me buy you fellers a drink.
Jack and Shad walked over beside me.
No thanks, we're in a hurry. Only idiots would hang around here.
Long Jake picked up the leather bag and shoved it back inside his coat.
So you boys are headed for Fort Kearney?
That's right.
You've got guts instead of brains. I heard the railroad's passing the hat around, starting to kill the engine fund. I suppose they'll soon have Red Cloud stuffed and mounted.
As he flipped out a receipt book with a pencil stuck in it, I felt my stomach drop.
I gave her all the cash we can spare, but you won't need it where you're going. If any of you ever make it back alive, take this to any federal marshal's office. Identify yourself, and they'll pay you straight away.
I stood speechless as he folded the script and shoved it into my hand. I pulled him to his feet. Hefting the iron ball in his arms, he winked and laughed right in my face as they drug him away. I turned to the bar like a man in a trance.
Gentlemen, I've been your partner for one day and already lost more money than I've made in the past 2 years.
I pulled out the money Queenie shoved in my pocket and spread it on the bar.
Expenses? Jack, there's less than $400 here. You couldn't have spent that much.
Horses ain't the only thing in short supply.
When we left the saloon that evening, the rain had come and gone again, but the evening sky was still gunmetal gray and hanging low, still growling from the bighorns like a galled bear. Water dripped from roofs and cut narrow streams through the mud street. The Catahoula Cur fell in beside us, walking slow and stiff-legged. His hackles were up, and he watched the other side of the mud street.
Hold it,
I said, stopping Jack and Shot with my arms before we stepped off the boardwalk.
That dog spooked by something.
We spread out slowly along the boardwalk as the Cur stooped low, ready to pounce toward a stack of nail kegs against the side of a shack. I nodded at Shot and Jack, drew my pistol, and stood in a crouch.
I know you're there, Flowers! Show yourself and let's get at it!
I ducked as the shot spit past my head and slapped the front of the saloon. Before I could get off around, the Catahoula sprang from the boardwalk and bullets kicking up mud around him. He tore across the empty street, snarling like a crazed elk. We saw a gun sail past the dog's head as he charged through the pile of barrels, then disappeared down the alley, snapping at Flowers' back. We stayed crouched with our pistols drawn and listened. In a few seconds, the Cur bounced out of the alley, wagging his long tail, and pranced toward us with a bloody rag hanging from his mouth.
I'll get you for this! I'll kill you!
Good boy.
I bent down and tried to take the rag.
Easy, boy. You keep it.
It's all yours.
Hear me, you bastard! I'll kill you!
Night had fallen by the time the storm passed. Now the dark, damp air felt gentle but crisp as I watched Shad take out a pair of gloves and push them over his hands. We came here to take horses to Kearney, and from here on, that's what we're gonna do. Non-stop. I looked back and forth between Jack and Shad. We stood beside a plank shack and watched the flicker of an oil lamp through the cracked door of the livery barn. Now let's get out of this miserable place while we still got enough horses to ride and enough sense to know how to ride them. We crept near the edge of the corral and looked around for the guards.
I hope this Queenie isn't setting us up.
She's charged us 10 horses, Shad. She better not be.
If you can't trust a whore, who can you trust?
I gave Jack a hard glance. He was serious.
Perhaps we could have bribed them.
Shad had no way of knowing what had happened with Trap. Bribery's a tricky business. Trust me. We slipped into the large corral among our herd of horses, and as Jack and Shad let down the rail gates, I eased up and peeped through a cracked door. One soldier lay passed out in a pile of hay, naked as sin. Beside him, a young whore sat buttoning her dress. 2 empty whiskey bottles lay beside her. She must have seen my shadow stir at the door. I leaned back from the door as she slipped out. It was the yellow-haired whore I'd seen in the saloon.
The other two are passed out in the hayloft. Queenie and Vera are with them. You must be Wyatt Earp. We've heard all about you. Vera is dying to meet you, but Lucy says you're cold-blooded. Is that true?
I glanced around and watched Jack and Shad slipping the horses from the corral and gathering them a few yards away. Don't be spreading it around. I'm touchy about it. Besides, I'm not supposed to be here.
Okay. We're lucky we got our horses from you earlier today.
Why's that?
They just put that up a little while ago.
She pointed to a warning notice nailed to the side of the barn, and she slipped back through the door. I turned and snapped it down. It said, "These horses are the confiscated property of the United States Army. Any attempt to remove them without written authorization will be considered an act of theft against the federal government, and the perpetrator or perpetrators will be prosecuted by a military court to the fullest extent of the law."
I'll be damned. You just stole those horses. For the second time.
What's left of them?
This ain't right!
I snatched the notice back from his hand and wadded it up. We led the string out across the swollen creek behind Crofton.
It's within their legal authority. If the government needs them in a time of
crisis...
There ain't
a thing right about confiscating a man's horses, crisis or not. It's plain thievery.
He gigged his horse forward. 30 yards away, the Catahoula cur slinked along with us, sniffing from tree to tree just inside the woods line as we made our way through the dark, wet night. His back looked straighter now that we'd left town.